Hello and welcome to the Soil Health Hub podcast. In each episode, we invite key industry experts and farmers to explore and debate challenges, opportunities, and innovations around soil health and its implications on farming. In this episode, we have two brilliant guests, Robin Ross and Annalisa Williams from Agnexus. Agnexus is a technical and precision market strategy development company for agri and agri-tech businesses. Robin is a professional agronomist who can fill both the scientist and sales strategist roles and has over 20 years of experience developing market-leading product offerings in the agribusiness industry. Prior to Agnexus, Robin Ross oversaw all US-based R&D programs on row crops, vegetables, turf, and horticulture with Acadian Plant Health. Annalisa is into compellingly communicating the value of unique technologies to a diverse grower community. Prior to co-founding Agnexus Consulting, Annalisa worked for Acadian Plant Health, building and managing their specialty crop corporate grower portfolio. Tune in and listen to the discussion with your host, Rob Ward.
I'd like to welcome Robin and Annalisa to the Soil Health Hub podcast. This is a really wonderful moment. We're talking to you across the water from the UK to exactly tell us where you are. And let's go for Annalisa first. Where are you? And welcome.
Sure. Well, thanks for having us, Rob. So I'm actually based on the central coast of California, halfway in between San Francisco and LA and beautiful Arroyo Grande.
Sounds good. They were teasing me before we started this about the weather, and I really confirm it's always sunny here. That's just all fake news. Anyway, over to Robin. Where are you based?
I am located just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. So I'm on the opposite coast, on the East Coast.
Wonderful. Tell us about what you guys do at Agnexus.
So really our core strength at Agnexus is helping new and inventive technologies within the ag space find commercialization partners within the industry. So taking something new and novel and really showcasing it to our book of contacts and being able to appropriately place these types of technologies with people who we know it fits well within their portfolio and find good people to take it to market.
What would be your perfect scenario there? Give a classic example.
Sure. So the most ideal clients that are out there, clients that have a technology that they are very passionate about, they understand all of the technical workings of their specific technology, but perhaps they don't have content or context to be able to successfully launch it into the market. Another way to say that is they know their product inside and out, but they don't necessarily have the why an end user should use, look at, or invest in this type of technology.
Okay. And Robin, tell us, what do you think?
There you go. I would add to that just saying that my favorite kinds of things to work with, favorite new cool technologies, are things that are really going to disrupt this industry. They normally have some kind of very positive environmental impact. I love working with new types of microbial products and things that are going to really use the existing soil microbiome to improve the absolute health of that crop and reduce some of the chemical inputs that you might need in that crop. It's a little bit like when you think about your own gut. How can you improve your own gut microbiome to make you healthier? And so you need less actual medical interventions. Crops work like that too. As I see newer technologies enter the market space, a lot of agriculture, now that's a real traditional old school business, goes back to the beginning of time practically. We're seeing digital technologies enter that. And we're seeing computer AI, you know, predictive models and so many things that agriculture has never seen. I think I can sometimes find it frustrating when people come like a Silicon Valley person with the most awesome thing ever approaches ag and they approach it in a way that is not really going to meet the personality of agriculture. And it's a conflict. So you end up with great technology that's crashing into culture and some great technologies can be lost like that.
And yet the impact they could have is amazing.
Yes.
We're working with a German data science business and they've reduced plant breeding times by 80% purely by data science. And you think, gosh, that's just an amazing breakthrough. You go from 14 years to 3 years or something like that. That's just data. But but you're right. There's lots of very quite scary technologies that scary because there's a lot of trust in them, isn't there? And I think that's probably the biggest problem, that farms are being sold too many things. They're at the bottom of the queue or bottom of the pile. There's nobody else to sell to, really, is there, after a farmer? You know, the farmers are, you know, the primary producers, and they're hit at so much by so many different ideas. It's not lacking in tech. I mean, ag tech is, the day we invented the trowel was tech, wasn't it? You know, it was more useful than my fingers. Right. And that's so, it's, as you say, it's been around for millennia. But what trowel metaphorically to use, and or piece of machinery, as it's gone on and on and on, has always been the hardest thing to know, I think, as a farm. And then you add in climate change or issues around weather or restrictions around what you can and can't do, and then trade barriers or currency changes. The weight of burden is on them. This is why we are working with trial farms to test this out and to talk to farms that have are more inclined, the early adopters. It's not a new idea, but it does help create those case studies of it working or not. This is where you find it out as well, isn't it? So, Robin, I think we connected on LinkedIn through a soil health article that we're involved with, and it's an area that is not just fascinating; it's critical. So it's such an exciting space. So, Robin, within that area, where is it going? Where's soil health changing? Because you're at the coalface there of what's going on. You know, what are the things that are working regards new ideas? Maybe a bit of a clue to some of the things that are not doing so well as well.
I would say that up until maybe the past year, that whole concept of soil health has been very vague. People didn't really know even what that means. Kind of like with humans, what is your gut health? What does it even mean? Should it mean you go drink kombucha? Or, you know, what is it? And in agriculture too, we knew these microbes were important, but we didn't know how to manipulate them, which ones are important, and how to use that for actual recommendations that might improve yields or improve our ability to grow that crop in a safe and sustainable way. So I'd say over the past year, with new genetic technologies, they're able to identify every single microbe that exists in the rhizosphere of the crop. And with the advent of newer computer machine learning types of technologies, they're even able to speak to the function of these microbes. The next step is going to be that will play into how new products are going to be developed that meet certain specific functions, like how do they help a crop pick up nutrients better or use existing nutrients or fight diseases or manage environmental stresses and things like that. The soil health can play into all of that. And there's a whole broad world now of products that can be targeted specifically at that, now that the technology is there to identify the microbes and how they work in communities and what they do. That's complicated. Did that make sense? I think I did.
Yeah.
Well, I think what it is a lot of new science, and it needs to be proven scientifically. I think I think many people say it's already proven by their practical experience, but scientific evidence seems to be what we're working towards. That market is fascinating. So, I mean, are you seeing businesses that are using biological solutions, as in the sellers, you know, the instructors that Annalisa was just talking about? Are you seeing them replace farm inputs at a very significant level now? If we look at farm inputs as basic nitrogen, you know, NPK, pesticides, fungicides, if that was a number, what's the percentage are you seeing that reduced because of these biological treatments?
You know, I don't know that we can put an actual number to it, because a farmer is going to do what a farmer needs to do to grow his crop. He will use the amount of fertilizer he's going to need to grow that crop, and he will control pests the way that he needs to control them. But with newer soil health and softer practices, they're starting to really realize that maybe I really don't need to use fertilizer in the way that I used to. Maybe I can do the same thing with some of these biological products, or maybe they're using some biological products or biostimulants that they simply don't have the pests they used to have. So it's not that they're going out there saying, I'm going to replace this. They're saying, whoa, look, my crop is healthier and I haven't even seen any of this disease yet. It's going to come by nature, but I think that they're thinking it. It's there. The products are there. We're primed. I don't think it's at the point where you can say, oh, yes, well, now biologicals have replaced 30% of crop inputs. It's to the point where they're starting to see the light that this could go that way. And I think it will.
I think it comes back a little bit to an economies of scale too. So to replace a unit of fertilizer with a unit of biologicals, the cost differential there to the farmer is quite significant. And so until there are some noted added benefits and people are jumping on board, as Robin said, that this is more of a sustainability practice for their land rather than just an input to grow a crop, I think that as that shift begins to happen, we'll see more biologicals being used rather than based commodity fertilizer programs. The other piece I see is with different biosolution products that are out there for fungal control or bacterial control. Those are being used as rotational products. So helping with different resistance and things like that, using these biologicals in rotation with some of the synthetic chemistries to hopefully be able to elongate the product life cycle of some of those technologies.
It's interesting. So your type of crops you're working with, what are those? Or is it not specific?
Not necessarily specific. I would say that personally, my expertise lies within the specialty crop market. So your lettuce, berries, avocados, wine grapes, specialty crops grown here on the West Coast of the U.S.
Right. And when you think about this, Rob, when you ask what crops that have a higher profit margin in them are more likely to be the first crops that adopt some of these new technologies. And you look at the price of avocados or strawberries or cherries, there's a little more margin in there where the grower can say, well, I'm going to try something a little bit different, or I'm going to buy a slightly more expensive product. When you look at the price of corn, beans, and wheat, they don't have much wiggle room in that to take very many risks or to add very many inputs that they're not completely sure are going to make that crop for them.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Although there are guys now trying to do a lot of biologicals in arable, but it's certainly in Europe and UK. One, and we spoke to recently, is trying to replace it entirely, but we'll see. So he's at 100%. The States is way ahead of the world from an ag tech perspective in many levels. What do you think is coming around the corner that the rest of us should be expecting regards this space beyond the points you already made?
I'll give you two that I really love. And maybe Annalisa can toss a couple of them in there, but I'll give you two of my three favorite new technologies. One of them is being able to identify the role of the soil microbiome. I think that's going to completely change agriculture and agriculture inputs. And it's going to take those inputs from this murky world of snake oils and what is this? Oh, trust me, it's going to help. It will completely change. So that's going to be new and cool. There's another cool technology out there that I just think is fun called B vectoring technologies. And this is a bacteria, might be a fungi. It's a microbial biocontrol agent. So it controls diseases in flowers. So Monilenia, Botrytis, and Colitotrichum, which are three key diseases in fruit. And it does this by attaching this little box of the biocontrol agent to the front of a beehive. So the bees walk through there with their little bee feet and get it on their feet, fly off to the tree, pollinate the flowers, and deposit this biocontrol agent directly into the flower where that disease might normally occur, or, well, always occurs. There you go. No sprays, no toxic anything, a cool and effective product delivered right where it needs to go. It's beautiful. I think that's one of the coolest new technologies I've seen out there.
It's almost lazy. It's too good. It's so good, isn't it?
It's going to be disruptive, though, because who actually is going to sell this? Who buys it and who sells it? The grower, the beekeeper, or the ag distributor? It's a little going to kind of disrupt the whole way the market works.
Wow, I love that.
Yes.
And Lisa.
Yes. So there's a couple of technologies that I'm really, really excited about coming to the market. And just going back to the microbe side of things. It's a microbe delivery technology. So anyone who is and you might not want to admit it, but knows what a wine box looks like, right? Will have an easy time being able to visualize this technology.
They don't know that in Europe, Annalisa. They don't know that here.
Imagine a wine box, okay? So a cardboard box with a bladder inside. This company has developed a technology where they can freeze dry a microbe, set it inside the cap, create a nutrient broth inside of this wine box in a sterile bladder so that when the grower receives this product, all he has to do, he or she has to do, is push the go button, essentially at the top of the wine box, right underneath the cap. The microbe falls into the nutrient solution and ferments on site. So within 48 hours, you have this live viable microbe that you're able to apply directly to the field. Now, this technology lends itself really, really well to microbes that have been hard to stabilize. So that would be a gram-negative bacteria, something that's been genetically modified or is non-spore forming. So really neat and unique technology that's really overcoming some of the question, concern, and doubt of the bug in a jug type delivery system.
There's a Florida business we're working with called Trialgy, and they essentially separating the algae, the liquid from the algae, and feeding that to and strawberry. Well, the software industry, primarily strawberries initially, but raspberries, blueberries, watermelon, and then now breaking out to other areas. The liquid, so it's a very interesting point I'm making. I'm just trying to work this out, because essentially the very beginning of this call was about gut health and soil health. Yeah. And essentially what we're talking about is probiotics and prebiotics. Mm-hmm. So one's a food, one's a creature that wants to eat that food. You're talking about the probiotics, the living creatures, yes. The probiotics.
Yes.
And Trialgia, for instance, are providing the prebiotics, which is having a very similar result, providing there is some probiotics in the soil, but that's shelf stable, that material. And I think a lot of the areas of concern that farms have been indifferent results because of living organisms that need to be treated as if they're cut lettuce. They're very vulnerable. So that system is sounding like a breakthrough. I was wondering how much damage can happen to a microbe if it's frozen or dry. So is it frozen? Is it, or what has it stored? Freeze dried. Freeze-drying does not affect its ability to come back to life then?
No, that's a nice stable way to hold it. Really, microbial companies make a liquid solution in a jug that the viability of that microbe declines quickly once it's in that jug. So once it's freeze-dried, it stays quite stable.
And that freeze-drying technique, is anything special about that, or is it just normal freeze-drying? I mean, I'm sorry, I've not heard of it, and I'm sure other people listening might have either.
Sure, anybody could freeze-dry a microbe, you know, That part is not hard. What's interesting, though, is how do you take that freeze-dried microbe, drop it into a nutrient solution such that it grows really, really fast, and then you put it in the field. So you are applying a live, vigorous microbe. Like, let's say you just wanted to freeze-dry your microbe and dust it out on your crop. You're not giving it the right environment to multiply and divide and be very viable extremely quickly. So it's kind of the freeze-dried part, but it's also the, how do you bump it to life, basically, before you put it out into the field? So it's kind of a two-step process. I want to go back also to your question about Trialgy. That's a whole different sector of products in my mind. I think it's interesting.
Well, they're having amazing results. Farms are significantly reducing their other inputs. I was there almost to the day this time last year in Florida, and it was a beautiful day. And we went around the farms, and we ate the strawberries, and they tasted great. And yet they were lasting nearly twice as long as a normal strawberry. So something's going on within the cell walls with this type of microbial activity that's affecting the strength of the plant, and therefore, in this case, the fruit coming off it. Average berry sizes are something like 20% bigger, easy to pick. And there's so many things that were right about it. This experience has been mirrored across blueberries and raspberries. So it just seems to be that the vigor, the immunity, the energy in the plant is transformed by this type of work.
It's a new sector of ag. I think it's worth mentioning. It's what I believe is called a metabolite type of product. So I believe it comes from when they grow their algae up, the algae grows in like a solution of stuff that the algae likes, and it grows. Then they actually remove the algae, so there's no algae left. They're simply applying the solution that the algae was growing in, and that has all these metabolites that the algae produced. These metabolites serve as signals of some sort to the crop. If you think about the human gut microbiome, your microbes in your gut produce metabolites that then cause specific functions in your body. It could be your mood. It could be all kinds of things that these metabolites are what's actually doing the work and serving as signals. And that represents a whole new segment of ag where people may, it may be something like true algae, where it's a metabolite from an algae that's signaling something in the plant. Or sometimes they'll grow bacteria and grow other kinds of microbes. They'll get rid of the bacteria or kill it. All that's remaining is the metabolites from that bacteria, but they still provide signals to the crop to do different things. So that's a whole different new segment of ag that I think is going to grow quickly as soon as we can figure out what the heck they do. You know, that's right. Something that I'm not sure we quite have our arms around yet is, what are these metabolites and what do they signal and how can we put that to use in agriculture to improve yields? And I admire True Algae for starting that process and working in that field and seeing what do these metabolites do and exactly how are they improving shelf life of those strawberries?
Or feeding chickens. They've actually higher, bigger egg sizes, a lot of better mortality. There's definitely, there's some, as you say, it's gut health and soil health.
And Robin hits on a really good point, and it kind of ties back to our conversation earlier about messaging and communications. And simply going to a grower and saying your fruit will taste better, your fruit will be bigger, you'll have better shelf life, that's great. But to have the how behind it makes that messaging so much more powerful. And as Robin said, it's great to see True Algae really digging in to find out the how behind their product.
We're working in the UK with a business that's developed a sensor for that can measure microbial biomass and get a live report in the field within 5 minutes. British invention, it's called PES Technologies. They liken it to a dog's nose. So if you've ever heard of, I actually have a Cocker Spaniel right here, we could demonstrate with you, but I think she's asleep. But she's a bit old now. But the dogs that they use, spaniels that they use at airports to check for cocaine, they're taught to smell that. This is very similar. So microscopic smells, nematodes, pathogens, all kinds of different type of microscopic volatile chemicals it can be taught to pick up, and yet it can give the results live, GPS logged where you are. What characteristics would you think would be in either both of you or either of you that would be really beneficial to the industry that would help this learning, the how to move forward?
That's a good question, and there is a learning curve, very much so, is in acceptance of the data that's coming back and creating the so what behind it. So I understand the different microbes that are out in my soil. I understand the functional groups. So what? And so really honing in on exactly how to translate the deliverable of the science into an actionable recommendation is something that I think needs to happen as adoption begins to grow.
Well, so if you had a magic wand in 5 years' time, what would this industry look like? That goes to both of you.
I think for me, sustainability is, I see that exploding. Making sure that the consumer at the end of the food chain, if you will, that they recognize that farmers and ranchers and food producers are doing everything that they can to produce a healthy, safe, ample food supply while making sure that they're taking into consideration the good of the planet.
And do you think we can we hit those sustainable development goals the UN have set us?
I think if we don't set them and put them out there as goals, then there won't be a chance of hitting them. But if they're out there, they may be lofty, but they keep us focused.
We have so many cool new technologies. I think that the regulatory system around the world is ill-equipped to manage these kinds of new technologies. And it's to the point where a lot of times regulatory systems block good, safe, new technologies. In 5 years, I'd love to see that reformed. So there's a clear, fast path for safe and sustainable products. By the same token, though, there's a lot of new technologies that maybe need a little bit of scrutiny. Synthetic biologies, genetically modified bacteria that we're putting into the environment to perform specific functions, or even RNA expression types of technologies where they're turning on, creating certain gene expressions in the plant. These are things the ag industry has never seen before, and our current regulatory systems seem to be somewhat ill-equipped at knowing what to do with them or even how to evaluate them. And so I would hope in the next 5 years, we've had a whole revamp of the entire thing.
If one thing taught Europe, particularly around GMO, is to manage that process or that transition very carefully, because it wasn't, and it was totally destroyed. I was working on a steering committee in the early 90s, and we had some amazing GMO strawberries that would have been fantastic for antifungal treatments, but they were all destroyed because we banned GMOs in Europe because of how we handled it. So I think your absolute caution has got to be played out here. We've got to get it spot on. There will not be a second chance, will there?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Europe is a more complicated place, and we seem to have stricter rules, but they probably are for the right reasons sometimes. It's been an absolute joy. You guys are a breathing fire of enthusiasm for this industry. It's wonderful. We're getting involved with COP26, with an agri-food tech event, where we're going to be leading and co-founding a new whole thinking around collaborative innovations, problem solving, which we're launching at COP26. Just to let you know, it's with an amazing guy called Peter Wren-Hilton, who pretty much is the Yoda for Australia, New Zealand and Singapore's ag tech scene. If you don't know him, check him out. He's an amazing guy. It'd be great to get you involved with that. Whether you can physically make it, Glasgow is a bit chilly in November, but nonetheless, virtually at least. But we are looking to work with people around the world to see how we can collaboratively solve a lot of the problems we're facing, because that's the only way forward. There's too much at stake not to. And so final question. We've all very fortunate to get to where we are in our lives for lots of reasons. Who is the one person that you'd like to thank to help you get to where you got to today?
There's actually two. First and foremost would be a close friend of mine. His name is Chris Darway, and he's a local farmer here in Arroyo Grande. And he's always my boots on the ground sounding board for any new technology that comes across my desk. He knows that when my phone number shows up on his phone, it's going to be something unique and something different, and always takes the time to give me perspective, not only from a farmer, right, but also from an investor standpoint. So I really appreciate that. And I can't tell you enough how lucky I feel to be working with Robin in this venture. She's been an amazing mentor and just absolutely fantastic to have been working with over the last 13 years, has taught me so much. And now to be able to go out and work together with her is fantastic.
Thank you.
Oh, that's lovely.
I know. Yeah. I think if I had to express someone that's been the most influential in my ad career is someone I met a couple of years ago named Dr. Chad Brommer. He owns a technology business out of Raleigh called Tremere. And they come up with new active ingredients for agriculture, safe and inventive new active ingredients. He had a product that's a bactericide that actually stands to handle citrus greening, which is a worldwide problem, as well as olive quick decline. He'd had this ingredient for a long time and asked Annalisa and I if we could help him find a commercialization partner for that. And we did. Within only a few months, we had this matched up with a very appropriate partner. And it changed my world because it made me realize that I love that. I love the technology. And Annalisa and I have an amazing ability to talk about them. And we truly are passionate about them. And this is something that it changed my world. We launched a whole new business and a whole new career based off of this one person and this one guy's technology.
This is a wonderful industry. It is a whole mixture of farmers, science, and some pretty fascinating, geeky, but wonderful people, isn't it? And right. It takes some really smart people like you two to help stick it all together. So that's fantastic. I'd like to give you a spiritual hug. Because it's been lovely to meet you, and you're certainly COVID safe where you are from here. But
I'm real safe. I already had it. I think I'm immune, so we're good.
I had it too. We dealt with it pretty quickly, but yeah.
Fabulous.
Thanks for making this happen, Annalisa. Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks,
have more soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to the Soil Health Hub podcast. If you'd like to learn more and join us, visit soilhealthhub.com. See you next time.